grisly one.
Their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Sliwa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Sliwa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
It must be like Putin.
Seven minutes after the hour five, as yours truly, Curtis Sliwa, is taking you home on the drive home at five. And this song, in honor of the dictator, despot, totalitarian butcher that he is, Vladimir Putin, if you don't get up in Moscow and dance to this top 40 hit, you get two bullets to the back of your head or you end up being exiled to the gulags in Siberia. But as we are high atop Madison Square Garden, the great facilities that have been provided for us to do this broadcast to all of you by NJDiet.com, it is interesting that the information that came down late in the day that Mueller has charged 13 Russians with a 2016 election informational warfare indictment, including three Russian entities, came almost within 48 hours of the announcement of Mitt Romney, age 70, that he is running for the U.S. Senate seat, replacing a guy who was a poster child for term limits, Orrin Hatch. Thank God he'll be gone. But if there was something memorable of the Mitt Romney campaign against Barack Obama his second time around, it was that he warned us that our number one enemies geopolitically are not the Chinese, not ISIS, but rather Russia.
Russia, I indicated, is a geopolitical foe. Not a
number one.
Excuse me. It's a geopolitical foe. And I said in the same paragraph, I said, and Iran is the greatest national security threat we face. Russia does continue to battle us in the UN time and time again. I have clear eyes on this. I'm not going to wear rose-colored glasses when it comes to Russia or Mr. Putin.
A geopolitical foe. This is not an announcement that the president of the United States was looking for. He did not want to see Mitt Romney replace Orrin Hatch. Obviously, heads up, Mitt Romney will win that Senate seat. And when he sits in the Senate, he will be a thorn in the president's backside, especially on all the issues that involve Russia. But earlier today, when the indictment was unsealed, the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, had this to say. First, about it was, let me make sure, the extent of what this indictment was about.
A grand jury in the District of Columbia today returned an indictment presented by the special counsel's office. The indictment charges 13 Russian nationals and three Russian companies for committing federal crimes while seeking to interfere in the United States political system, including the 2016 presidential election.
And that including establishing a fake online presence.
They used stolen or fictitious American identities, fraudulent bank accounts, and false identification documents. The defendants posed as politically and socially active Americans, advocating for and against particular candidates. They established social media pages and groups to communicate with unwitting Americans. They also purchased political advertisements on social media networks.
So unwitting Americans, that would mean, at this point, no collusion with the Trump campaign, correct?
Now, there is no allegation in this indictment that any American was a knowing participant in this illegal activity. There is no allegation in the indictment that the charged conduct altered the outcome of the 2016 election.
So as the president was on his way down to Florida to meet with family members of those who were killed by that crazy gunman Cruz, he tweeted away, "You see, this proves no collusion. This proves no collusion." But then again, it seems to be just another measure that Mueller and his team of inquisitors have taken in this ongoing investigation. But in order to connect all the dots, rather than hear from somebody who's pro-Trump or anti-Trump, and then they come at this with their own spin. I'm just trying to get an explanation of what this indictment is about, why it came about, and what, if any, role it has in the overall investigation of the Trump campaign and the Trump administration. On the line to discuss that is Noah Rothman from Commentary Magazine. Thanks for joining us again here on the Drive Home at 5, Noah. Yes, hello, Noah. Yes, Noah?
Hello.
I'm sorry, Noah. Our disquantificator was unfortunately aimed to the west, and I see that, according to your locale, you're here in the east. So my many apologies, Noah.
No problem. I'm with you now.
Okay, so splashy headlines will follow this. Some people will say, oh, the noose is tightening around the Trump administration in terms of involvement with Russians. Trump himself, our president, has tweeted, you see, this proves no collusion, no collusion. What role, if any, Noah, that you can see, does this series of indictments against Russian nationalists play in the overall investigation of Mueller?
Well, it's a pretty significant step. I think everybody probably risks overreading it. It's not the end of the collusion narrative. It's not the end of the investigation. It establishes, essentially, that there were quite a few Russians, 13 individuals, three entities, very well funded to the tune of $1.2 million on average per month, using this campaign to influence American political activities. That's what it establishes, or it speaks to establish in court. And that's about it. So you can draw whatever conclusions you want from that. What it doesn't point toward is a willingness on the part of the campaign individuals who are cited in this indictment to actively cooperate with Russian individuals. It says they were unwitting accomplices. Now, that's not a crime. It's really stupid. It's kind of suspect. You know, throughout the Cold War, we remember what it was like when people were willingly cooperating with the Soviet Union. They weren't getting money for it, but they were fellow travelers. That's what this sounds like to me, really stupid, useful idiocy. But it's not a crime. So to that extent, the Trump administration and the campaign can take some solace in that, although it's sort of a thin reed to perch yourself on.
No, totally understood. But no, we have seen a slew of stories of late about bots, Russian bots, you know, who affected coverage on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, the whole nine yards. Is this exactly what this indictment is honing in on?
That is exactly what it's honing in on. And it talks about, for example, this campaign had a graphics department. It was a pretty sophisticated campaign, and it was aimed mostly on social media. And we saw a lot of those graphics because they were presented before Congress as indications of the extent to which this campaign was targeting people online and trying to change their opinions. If you saw those graphics, they were ridiculous. They were like images of Satan and Jesus arm wrestling that said, if you don't want Satan to win and Hillary to win, you got to click like. This is what we were talking about here. This is the super sophisticated operation. To the extent that, I mean, I'm very skeptical of this sort of thing, but I feel like you really have to engage in motivated reasoning. You have to want to believe if you're going to be taken in by this sort of thing. And that's what we're talking about here.
What, if any, are the links to Vladimir Putin himself in Moscow?
Well, we haven't seen anything direct. This was operated out of St. Petersburg, this organization. It's very well funded. It was very well operated. I would be shocked if there was no state involvement, because this is not.
I think we
government.
Yes, I'm sorry. No, we lost you momentarily. Go ahead.
Sure. This is something that I would be surprised if there was no government links here, but there is nothing alleged.
I think we're losing Noah. Let's see if we can get him back on the disquantificator. Because we are facing to the west when, in fact, we need to hook up on the east. I think it's incredible because in listening to Michael Savage, who came on before us, he spent at least an hour moaning and groaning about why the FBI would release this indictment at a time when the nation was in mourning because of the 17 who were killed in the high school in Florida. Noah Rothman, the timing of the release of this indictment, do you perceive there to be any special significance to it? Because obviously the Department of Justice controls the release of the information.
Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if there was some significance to it, just in part because the Mueller probe has been feeling a lot of heat, particularly from the president and from this administration. And to the extent they delivered them some good news, if there's a political motive here, and I wouldn't put it past them, although it's a little, you know, suspicious to suggest it, but it may have bought them a little bit of time to continue their operations, their work unmolested by the president or anybody in his circle. So there could be a political motive there.
All right. Well, I just had Political Vertigo listening to Michael Savage for 2 hours. He had me believing that this was a conspiracy to have this indictment lead the news on a day where the FBI is really getting it handed to them because of their failure to follow up on leads of the Nutnik gunman down in Florida, Cruz.
Yeah, that's true. And they're two separate issues, so we got to keep them separate. But what is alleged is that the FBI really dropped the ball. Local law enforcement really dropped the ball. This guy was in everybody's sights, and they knew about him, and they did not follow. The FBI, by admission, did not follow the correct procedures here, and a lot of people died as a result. I think that probably has longer legs than what has been alleged in this indictment, because this is all about Russians, foreign nationals, activity that's not going to be pursued in the courts, and we're not going to arrest these people. They're not going to travel and get arrested. So this story kind of dies, whereas the story involving the FBI's behavior leading up to this horrific massacre is probably not going to be a story that disappears tomorrow.
Do appreciate that, Noah. But Rick Scott, the outgoing governor of Florida, who's term limited, because of what has taken place in the Florida shooting case involving the crackpot screwball nutjob Cruz, has called for the resignation of the FBI director, Ray. Ray just got into office. He's just been appointed. Recommended by Shamuel Hefe, Chris Christie, just been appointed, taking over for Comey and McCabe, the deputy director, who obviously Trump had no love for. I understand everyone is looking to pin responsibility for what went wrong in the Florida shooting and all the warning signs that should have been followed up on. But do we really want to blame the FBI director, Ray, who just got into office? Governor Scott, you talk about grandstanding. Boy, that is the definition of grandstanding.
77 WABC. Traffic and transit.
Eastbound on the Northern State Parkway at the Meadowbrook Parkway, a disabled vehicle takes out the left lane. Westbound the Grand Central Parkway, the off-ramp to the LIE, an accident partially blocks that ramp. Westbound on the LIE is crowded Van Dam Street to Borden Avenue. Southbound Henry Hudson Parkway packs in 79th Street to 59th, while northbound is heavy 125th Street to 158th. Northbound Van Wyck is heavy Northern Boulevard to Linden Place, the BQE northbound. That's crowded 30th Avenue to the Grand Central Parkway. Traffic sponsored by Exergen Temporal Scan. Thermometer. Outsmart the flu. The Exergen Temporal Scanner is the number one thermometer preferred by pediatricians. Smart technology backed by over 70 clinical studies. Protect your family. Rely on Exergen.com. Channel 7's Bill Evans forecast calls for cold tonight, low 26. Some sunshine tomorrow. Snow moving in around 7 tomorrow evening. Next traffic report about 15 minutes. I'm Dave Sullivan on 77 WABC.
As in so many things that I do, and I urge you to use a service or a product that I advertise here, it's because I'm involved with the service or I've used the product. And when I ask you to please, when at all possible, visit Sunrise Chevrolet. When you're looking for a new car or a used car or you need service on your current vehicle, it's not just a place I'm talking about that's sort of a flag on a map. I've been there many times before. Been in the parking lot where they have the new cars, the used cars, played with my two young sons there for many years, in which I would tell both Carter and Hunter, hey, I'll give you the make and model. I want you to find that car in the lot. And it was great. And always treated with respect by the salespeople who are obviously operating in the showroom. But Sunrise Chevrolet is a family-run business that does business the old-school way. And I know for so many of you, you're saying, gee, I wish I could find some entity that had old-school values in the way they treat you as a customer. That's it, Sunrise Chevrolet. You know where they are? They're on the corner of the Service Road of Queens Boulevard and 69th Road in the heart of Forest Hills. And I'm going to be there at 2 o'clock on Sunday, rain, snow, sleet, or shine. So if you happen to be in the area, you know, like you're shopping on Austin Street or 71st and Continental or Regal Park, hey, drop on by. I'll be there with my two sons. Meantime, though, for many of you, before you decide to schlep there, all the way from the Rockaways or the North Shore, Long Island, or from Brooklyn or other parts of Queens, all you got to do is do yourself a solid. You could be sitting in front of a computer terminal right now doing your work or a laptop, or you're on your iPhone or your smartphone. Just go online and see the vast selection of new cars, trucks, vans, and SUVs at Sunrise Chevrolet or the many used cars. Go online at drivesunrisechevy.com. That's drivesunrisechevy.com. And then allow Eric, the general manager, and his salespeople to find the perfect vehicle for you and the right kind of a payment plan that you can afford. And that is so critical because they make it so easy to buy a car with all types of credit at Sunrise Chevrolet. They don't give you the fiscal rope-a-dope and then leave you hanging. And there are no hidden fees. You got that? No hidden fees. In addition, you also get a chance to eyeball the many used cars they have in their superstore. And best yet, Eric, the general manager, he's going to give you his cell number. That's old school values. That's the old way of doing business. So you can have customer service whenever you need it from the grand poobah, the guy who's calling the shots at Sunrise Chevrolet. So do yourself a solid. Go online to drivesunrisechevy.com. That's drivesunrisechevy.com. See Eric, the general manager, and his team. And when you walk in the door at the showroom, just tell him, Curtis Sliwa sent me.
Curtis Sliwa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
By 27, as the President of the United States is heading down to Florida to meet with the families of those who were killed and injured in that high school at the hands of the AR-15 toting screwball crews, the FBI is really under fire because apparently on two separate occasions they failed to act on a tip warning of the Florida school shooter's potential for violence. The first one, you could chalk it up, because he really was on a YouTube posting. Some guy in Jackson, Mississippi spotted it. Difficult to follow up on, not impossible. But the second one, about a month before he charged into the school, shooting the AR-15 at the students. Apparently, there was a call giving details suggesting that the FBI check into this guy because he wanted to be a school shooter and was threatening acts of violence. On the line to discuss it is David Coletti. He's a former FBI operative. In fact, David, you live in Florida, don't you, Dave?
Oh, absolutely. I live in Orlando, Florida, 35 miles from Cocoa Beach.
Okay. Earlier in the day, the governor, Rick Scott, called for the FBI director, Christopher Wray, to resign over this. Do you agree with that assessment of the governor of Florida?
Absolutely. I believe our president, Mr. Trump, who's in charge of our safety right now while he's the president, you see, it's a mess at management, not your everyday working agent out there working undercover, the ones I work with. We're talking about management. They're on the backs of their heels going backwards. They're in shell shock right now. Half the people are going to disagree with it anyways, and half will agree. It's time for our president to clean house at the top of the FBI and stop thinking about politics and put us, the people, first. Put the children first, because this happens over and over. I'm tired of it because I worked it. I've seen the ugly head of the beast. You can tell I'm a little worked up. This is preventable. Now, let's not dump it all on the FBI. They are like the Hail Mary pass at the end. They're the last ones to know, because the last thing people want to do is go talk to police officers and agents and rat people out. But it's time for that to change. And I have a program that I've been working on for over a year and a half to fix this. And I'd like to launch it on your show next time I'm on, but not today. But it's time for our president to clean house.
All right. But David, Christopher Wray has just gotten into office as the director, having taken over for Comey, who was fired, McCabe, who just resigned. So really, Christopher Wray maybe has a month in office.
He's a swamp monster. He's a swamp monster. Look at his past. They found Governor Chris Christie's, and y'all know more about this than I do, up there by you, cell phone in his safe at his office. What is that? He's underqualified. That right there disqualifies him at all to be head of the FBI when something what, is he that stupid that he just forgot it was in there? Well, then he's incoherent to be in office. So he needs to go. I'm sorry, but it's time. He should have never been there. He is a swamp monster.
All right, but Dave, there's only a total about 14,000 special agents for the FBI all over the country. That's like half the size of the New York City Police Department, and they have responsibilities. They did a great job busting these twins, these terrorists in the Bronx who wanted to do us harm. They're responsible for spying, white-collar crime, organized crime, political crimes. Don't you think it's a little too much to ask so few agents to be on top of so many things?
Well, let's say this. Our American people expect too much out of our government. Yes, they are the boots on the ground, the officers, the agents out there in the streets. They're not management. Don't let your audience get confused with management, which is swamp monsters, and your regular agents out there working the fields. I was out there as an operative. There's informants. There's criminal informants. You know, we do most of the work. We blaze the trail. Then we introduce agents. So we're out there, too. We don't get the notoriety, but we're out there. I've seen it. There's so much going on out there. Your people would just be sick if they knew of all the crimes that were going on and the cover-ups. But management, right now we're talking about management, is so far separated than your everyday boots-on-the-ground agents. And everything in between, the managers in between, the head of the FBI, Ray, and your working people, there's so many tiers. There's too many filters. And everyone goes into CYA mode. I don't need to tell your audience what CYA means. They all cover their butts. That's what they're trained to do. Then when something like this happens at the school shooting, everyone points at each other. It's too late. How do you bring those kids back? There's no way.
To appreciate that, that's David Gletty, former FBI operative, who actually lives not far from the scene of the carnage, the killing of the 17 students that the president is on his way to visit. But I must say, the FBI, I don't think people have an understanding of this. New York City Police Department has about 40,000 members, personnel. Naturally, you have cops out in the street, cops in the cars, cops on desk duty, cops doing paperwork. You got management. And not all of those 40,000 cops are available each and every day. Some are on vacation. Some are on leave, sick leave. Some are on special assignment. So you say to yourself, if you only have 14,000 FBI agents all over the country and 56 field offices, and we know that they are getting thousands of calls every day from also nutjob screwballs who are claiming all kinds of things, and then also people calling looking for love in all the wrong places, how is it that we decide to bust on the FBI when, in fact, wasn't the Broward County Sheriff's Department? Hadn't they been called to visit the screwball Cruz's house on 37 different occasions? What information did they come up with? Why is it that the governor, I know why he in Florida wants Christopher Wray to resign. He's grandstanding. Why is it we're busting the stones of the FBI on the nutjob Cruz, who legally gets an AR-15 at 18, gets clips with 15, 20 bullets apiece, can walk into high school and blow people away? That's not the responsibility of the FBI, is it?
Imus in the morning.
So far, so good.
And the drive at 5.
There are so many ways to do it.
On air, online, on the app.
That's unbelievable.
77 WABC.
Bro, I got to maintain. Like me, it's going insane.
Insane in the membrane. 5:41, President of the United States here on the drive home at 5 on his way to Florida to meet with the family and those whose loved ones were killed or injured by Cruz, the AR-15 toting killer. And we found out that he had mental health issues, and that's what the president wants to talk about. He doesn't want to talk about gun control, but rather mental health issues. So who better to have on the line to discuss it than Dr. Jeff Goodyear, America's psychologist, board-certified clinical psychologist, course director of behavioral medicine. Thanks for joining us again on the Drive Home at 5, Dr. Jeff.
Of course, Curtis.
All right, first off, we've been told that this young man had a mental health program he was involved in. He was getting counseling. He was getting medicine. Are we privy to that?
It's very interesting. You know, there are laws, HIPAA laws, that actually protect someone from having that information released. So I'm not quite sure of how that information came out. I think it may be a situation where they're looking at, for the greater good, they need to let people know what was going on. But we should not have had that kind of information.
Now, why? Because, see, people are clamoring. You know, they want to find somebody to blame. The president has said, hey, our mental health is a dollar short a day late. That's what has led to so many of these shootings. Why is it important that there be a blanket of no information when it comes to somebody who is getting mental health care?
Well, again, we need to protect the rights of all individuals, and it's a delicate balance. I think information can be released, however, to say that someone was in treatment, but you can't say where, and you can't say exactly what the treatment is. But I think what we're finding out, if this is in fact true, then where were the holes in the system? Was this person compliant on their medications? Were they going on a consistent basis? Because you can be in treatment and be on meds, but if you're not, the C word, consistency and compliance, is what's most important, or the treatment is for naught.
Now, Doc, if you have decided, I'm not going to go to Dr. Jeff any longer for my weekly appointments, I'm not taking the medicine that's been prescribed to me that might calm me down, you can't be locked up for that, right?
No, the person can't be locked up for that, but there are mandatory reporting rules, and if you feel that a person who has stopped coming to therapy may be a danger to themselves or others, you do have the responsibility to then report that to local authorities and make sure, for the sake of the patient, that they are getting help. But in doing so, you're also protecting the public.
Now, obviously, you don't know his case history, but it's been reported that he claims he was hearing voices, voices that were telling him what to do. It almost takes us back to the Son of Sam, where the 44 caliber killer said, I was hearing voices, you know, commanding me what to do. If, in fact, that's true, what would that indicate to you? What kind of a mental disorder?
Well, it clearly points to some sort of schizophrenia when you're looking at auditory hallucinations. You know, quite often we teach in medical school those, you know, TV images of people seeing things that aren't there. That often doesn't happen. It really is about the auditory hallucinations and may speak to some sort of a psychosis. And that's pretty serious.
Now, with so many young men in our country now who have been diagnosed with Asperger's syndrome and some with different levels of autism, we've seen them act out sometimes in a similar way, although generally in a verbal way where they're threatening people. They say they're going to kill them, behead them. They attack their parents. They physically engage other people who are trying to help them or protect them. What is a society to do? People who have been diagnosed with these ailments, but they're still going to act out, aren't they?
Well, let's be clear that people with autism or even people with schizophrenia are not dangerous individuals. As a matter of fact, they are in more danger of being attacked by others. It's when you see a combination of different types of mental illnesses and the person is not getting the treatment, that's when it becomes something that we have to take care of, and we need to make sure that they're not only protecting themselves, but that we are protecting society. But to your general question, if somebody does not want to get treatment, they're concerned about the stigma, they're not on their medications, that is the biggest dilemma that we have in this society. And young people, Curtis, you know that. You worked with the Guardian Angels. You were surrounded by young people. It's important that they fit in and be like everyone else. And so they don't want to deal with the reality that they may have a serious mental illness.
Do appreciate that. That's Dr. Jeff Kadir. But think of it, ladies and gentlemen. We're all grabbing for straws. We want to blame someone. Something out there for why Cruz, the screwball, the nut, actually went over the deep end, walks in with an AR-15, by the way, that he was legally entitled to purchase in the state of Florida. Not a handgun. If he had gone into the same gun shop, said, hey, just give me a handgun. Nope. But we can sell you an AR-15, right? A weapon of war. Yeah, by the way, since you can sell me an AR-15, can I have those clips there, you know, that had like 15, 20 bullets a piece? No questions. How many would you like? I'll take 4, 5, maybe that's 6. I got a little extra pay from the fast food joint I'm working at this week. No questions asked. And it's a rubber stamp state in Florida, man. You just come in, show a license. You inhale, you exhale, and you're going to be able to legally walk out with weapons in the state of Florida. But not a handgun. And I would think, okay, what does more damage? A handgun or an AR-15? Man, it doesn't require knowledge of guns to understand. If he's legally entitled to a gun, should have been a handgun. Should not have been an AR-15.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
.555 as we continue on the drive home at 5. And El Chapo, Pablo Shorty Guzman, is claiming that he is penniless. He is destitute, almost a derelict. In fact, here is the narco terrorist who was the head of the Sinaloa drug-dealing cartel, who's making billions of dollars. At one time, rated by Fortune magazine to be one of the richest billionaires in the world, only below Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Bill Gates of Microsoft, and oh yeah, the big Mexicano right in Mexico City, Carlos Slim, like part owner of the New York Times now. Hey, only slightly behind, but he was in court, and he was saying, gee, I don't have the money to pay my legal fees. And then all of a sudden, his attorney that you thought was doing a work of God, right? God's work for El Chapo. He blurted in and he said, Judge, it's more than that. It's the oppressive measures that the feds are using against Mr. Narco Terrorist number one, Pablo Shorty Guzman.
The cells, he's always complained that they're either too cold or too hot. It could be summer, winter, doesn't matter. The temperature fluctuates. He has constant headaches. He vomits now regularly, almost every day, he says.
Wait a second. He's complaining that in an American jail, which is downtown right next to U.S. Southern District, the MCC, that it's either too cold or too hot. He has headaches. You know what? Give him St. Joseph's baby aspirin. And he starts vomiting. Well, that's because I guess he can't have any burritos there or tacos or whatever, the food of his choice. Again, to his lawyer, he said, look, Mr. Chapo has promised this time he will not kill any judges or jurors, as he did repeatedly in Mexico when he ran the country. He'll play by American rules. But I want you to know, my client El Chapo is not a rat. He's not going to eat the Parmesan cheese. He's not interested in cutting a deal with the feds. Let's go to trial. Let's go to trial now.